This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all Have Another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. As always, Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, your host in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and ready to talk with some of the people that help make our sport a success. It's always such a delight to be able to visit with the trainers in our sport and to hear their stories. So many of them unique, but in so many ways, they're very similar, and I think you'll find the same case with tonight's guests. Want to extend a special welcome to everybody joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM 206. That is your usual home on Sirius XM Radio for Trainer Talk. And don't forget that everybody joining us worldwide, horseracingradio.net. You can stream us on our website each and every week, and you can go back and listen to a podcast of this show and all of our Trainer Talk shows right there at horseracingradio.net. And by the way, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Put it in your phone. It's really easy to get those podcasts sent directly to you each and every week right here on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. Well, I mentioned our kind of alluded to our two guests here tonight. We're going to kick things off with Wayne Mogie in the first half of the program. Always fun to catch up with Wayne. I think you're really going to enjoy hearing his story. And then Ron Fauché in the second half of the program. So it's a busy show. We'll get right to it. And Wayne Mogie has sent out 481 career winners to date. His runners are fast approaching the $8 million mark in earnings. He's a native of Paris, Kentucky, just outside of Lexington. And I can guarantee you he's a Kentucky Wildcat through and through, having graduated from the University of Kentucky. And Wayne Mogie joins me now on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. Wayne, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Wayne, is it pretty safe to say that you do indeed bleed blue?
It's a pretty safe assumption. I do indeed.
All right, well, do this for me then. Turn in to a college basketball analyst and give me your best Dickie V. Do the number one ranked Wildcats go undefeated this year?
I say they do.
Really?
Yes.
You are blue through and through. I like that.
They have no weaknesses. I think they're strong at all points of the floor, and I think they have as good a shot as any team since Indiana to get it done. So,
do you try to watch most of the games?
I do. Yeah, every chance I get.
What did you study at UK?
I was in the College of Agriculture, and just got a basic ag communications degree.
Okay.
Graduated in 1989.
All right. So is that something that you're able to use now that you're training horses? Does that help you in any way?
If a mom and dad's watching after they paid for the majority of my schooling, I'd say yes, but probably not. I kind of got the degree as a fallback plan in case I wanted to pursue some other aspects of the horse industry. And I mean, there's some things that correlate with the degree, but for the most part, not really, I guess, to answer your question.
Yeah. I always tell people that I cut my teeth on racing at Saratoga because I grew up it was about an hour and 15 minutes from Saratoga. So that's kind of my home track. How about you? Would you consider Keeneland, I guess, to be your home track?
Basically growing up, but Turfway Park, actually, I live up in Walton, Kentucky, and I would consider that to have been my home track for the last 17, 18 years.
How about as a kid? What do you remember about going to the races for the first time?
Oh, I can remember going to Keeneland at a pretty young age. My dad managed a Lapa farm out in Paris, and we sold broodmares and yearlings and all that stuff, and didn't race a whole lot, but followed it and went to the races quite often.
Did your dad encourage you to get involved in the racing business?
Not necessarily. He helped at all aspects of it that he could. He just wanted me to do something that I was interested in and had a passion for, and something that he thought I could be good at, and you know, kind of landed on training horses. So.
At what point in your childhood did you finally decide that, hey, this is pretty cool, and I want to be around this, and this is what I want to do for my life?
We actually were involved in quarter horses prior to getting into the thoroughbreds.
Okay.
Although my dad managed the thoroughbred farm, we grew up showing quarter horses and kind of migrated into racing some quarter horses. We'd ship up to Indiana and over to Illinois, and so we kind of got our teeth wet, and I cut my teeth on training quarter horses to begin with. And then kind of moved over into the thoroughbreds because, you know, in Kentucky, it wasn't a lot of quarter horse racing opportunities. So it was kind of a natural progression into the thoroughbreds.
Yeah. What do you remember about making that decision to segue into thoroughbreds? Was it a whole lot different than what you were doing with the quarter horses, or were there plenty of similarities?
There's tons of similarities. I mean, you basically start with an athlete and just try to, you know, expose their abilities, whether it be, you know, going 400 yards or going a mile. You know, they're bred to do what they do, and so I correlate a lot from the quarter horses into the thoroughbreds.
So you never had a apprenticeship, so to speak, with other trainers. It was, you know, just kind of learning from being around your dad, the quarter horses, and then you went right into training on your own with the thoroughbreds right away.
Yeah, I had a few opportunities through the farm that my dad managed to possibly go work for some guys, but on the Lapa farm, they had an immaculate training facility, and I actually started, you know, preparing some young horses for some different farms in the area, and lo and behold, you know, they have one that wasn't ready to go to the track or something, so I ended up keeping it, and, you know, before you knew it, it was ready to run, so we would race it, and started off doing pretty well right off the bat. So I really just kind of started on my own and, you know, kept an eye out and watched the guys that were successful and tried to emulate some of the things that they did and just went right on with it. So
who were some of those trainers that you would try to emulate?
Oh, at that time, you know, Wayne Lucas was the pinnacle and still is at the top of the game. So, you know, kept a close eye on guys like him and Shug McGahee and Bill Mott, and just all the guys that were at the top of the game.
What's it like for you now being one of their peers?
Oh, it's I feel honored to be making a living in this game, and it's a business that every day is a new day, and I've not once woke up and dreaded going to work. It's always something that it's exciting, and prospects always keep you looking to the next race.
I'm sure Wayne, by the way, Wayne Mogi here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. I'm sure, Wayne, there were moments when you were just getting started and you're stabled at the same tracks as guys like Shug McGahee and D. Wayne Lucas, and then you're running horses in the same races that they're in. That had to be somewhat of a surreal experience for you, just a kid growing up in Paris wanting to be around it.
Oh, it really was. But there and again, it's all about the horse, and if you have the horse that can compete, it really doesn't matter what trainer you go up against. If you've got the horsepower, you know, you can compete with anybody if you're doing it the right way. So.
What's the most rewarding thing about being a trainer, Wayne?
Just working with these animals. You know, it's like I said, it's a passion that you develop. And it's just really cool to prepare them and see them go out there and perform at the best of their ability. And it's very satisfying and gratifying to take a horse and do well with them.
If Wayne Mogi was going to sum up his philosophy when it comes to training thoroughbreds, how would you do it?
Oh, it's all about the horse. I mean, they're athletes. They're bred to be racehorses. They're beautiful animals that if you take care of them properly and you do right by them, they'll repay you.
All right, you can say it's all about the horse, and it is. But to an extent, there are things that trainers can do to keep that horse in peak form. And what are some of those things that you've learned along the way that just seem to work for you? Because you have an awful lot of success, Wayne.
Well, I think most of it has to do with each horse is an individual, and being able to determine what makes each individual horse click, what makes them give you that peak performance, I think is key.
Do you have to treat each horse individually? And you can't just use the same philosophy across the board for every horse, can you?
No, you can't. You definitely can't. I mean, there's some horses that require more training than others. There are some horses that require more work than others. It's being able to figure out each individual horse and find out what makes them most happy. So when it comes race day, they're going to give you everything they got and perform at their peak level.
That's a great point. And as somebody, Wayne, who has never trained a racehorse, I'm always curious to know how trainers will learn those things about each horse. Does it happen in the mornings? Does it happen when they go to the post in the afternoon? Where are you gathering most of your information on each horse?
Most of the horses tell you what they're all about in the mornings. I mean, we're with them every day, 7 days a week, and we see their development and the process that they go through from each stage, and they pretty well tell you what kind of horse they're capable of being. And there's no substitute for class, and you know, you can tell pretty quick what horses demonstrate class and which ones are not going to be quite as good.
Wayne, one of your owners, Michael Hall, reached out to me and asked about having you join me here on the program, and I'm so thankful that he did. One thing he mentioned in that email, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but he said, Wayne has conducted himself and his operation at the highest level of integrity. What does it mean to have your owners talk about you in that manner?
Oh, I mean, it's a good feeling. You know, those guys, they put a lot into the game. And it's very satisfying to be able to get them to the winner's circle. And that's what it's all about. Most of these guys, they have discretionary income that they put into the game, and they want to see you do right by the horse first and foremost. And, you know, when you can take a horse and make these guys money, it's very rewarding.
Well, you know, it's always interesting that there's a flip side to everything. And that scenario that you just laid out, that, you know, owners putting money into the sport and that they have to obviously reap some reward from their investment, that's something that has now led you to be down in Tampa Bay for your second full season of training, whereas typically you would have stayed here in Kentucky throughout the winter. Talk about that.
Yeah, you know, like I said previously, Turfway Park has been my base of operation for quite some time. And when they instituted the poly track, they went to a year-round training facility during the off season, and we were able to stay there and train at Turfway during the summer and ship to the various tracks in the area and race. So that kind of was home base for me. And then they stopped training in the summer, so we started having to move to different locations. And Turfway Park, let's face it, they've kind of come on hard times, and it's difficult under their current purse structure and, you know, kind of make things productive for my clients. And we decided that Tampa was a nice fit for the level of stock that I've got currently. So we made the decision to come down here last year for the season and had quite a bit of success for the first time being down here, and decided to come back down again this year, and we're happy that we did so far.
As somebody who was born and raised here in the state of Kentucky, and you speak so fondly of Turfway Park and what it meant to you, at least as a young man growing up in this sport, that can't be easy for you to watch happen here in the state.
No, it's very frustrating. for a multitude of reasons. And the other and probably the most important reason is I've also have a family in Northern Kentucky, and I've got four children, and, you know, I've always been able to be home. I've coached football and basketball, and my girls show horses, and, you know, I've always been very active in their lives, and being away from home has probably been the hardest transition that I've had to make. But they understand. They're getting to the age now where they realize what dad's got to do, and so we're making the most of it.
Yeah, it's like any other business. I mean, let's face it, trainers are running their own business, and if you can't make a go of it in a certain location, you need to make some changes and go where the money is so that you can continue to do what's best in the interest of your owners. And I can imagine that has to be a bit trying on you, being away from home and not being able to be there with the kids and the family.
Yeah, it's been tough. But, you know, we made a conscious decision, you know, 15, 16, 17 years ago and bought some property there in Northern Kentucky and decided that was going to be home. And it's been very good to me, and I enjoy it. I have no regrets. And I've, you know, like I said before, I've always been very active in my kids' lives. And I mean, I could have went anywhere at any time, but chose to be involved with them. And, you know, it comes to a point, like you said, you know, you got to do what's best for your business and being able to provide for your family. And that's where we're at right now.
So. Are the kids, obviously they're into some kind of sports. You mentioned the girls riding and you mentioned you coaching various sports. Are the kids athletic?
Yeah. My two boys both play sports. One's a senior in high school and the other's eighth grade. So yeah, they've both been very active in sports all through school. And my daughters, they've done volleyball and soccer and stuff like that, and now they're real big into barrel racing, and so we've got to try to support them in that and keep them busy.
What's more difficult, teaching the kids or trying to teach these young horses to do their thing on the track?
That's a good question. At times, I think it might be the kids, and other times it's the horses.
Are any of your kids involved with, or do they want to be involved with racing in any way?
No, I don't think so. Not at this point. They've all got their interest. I mean, they enjoy coming to the races and helping out Dad whenever they can, but I don't think the bug has bit any of them to the point where they want to make a lifelong commitment to training horses or being in the industry, but, you know, that could always change.
Talking with trainer Wayne Mogi here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. If you miss any portion of the show, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, catch a podcast of this week's show and every show right there on our site and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Wayne, I'm just curious, you never seem to have the big numbers that a guy like Pletcher or Asmussen or Baffert tends to have. That's not your operation, but yet you continue to win at a very high rate every year. What's the key when you're running a smaller operation like that?
The key is having the proper owners that put their trust and faith in what you're doing and what you're trying to accomplish. And over the last few years, I've had a good mix of some breeders that have sent me horses, and also some new guys that are kind of getting into the game and playing the claiming game a little bit, and we've had some success doing that. So, you know, it's just a good mix of clients right now that are kind of open for different ideas, buying horses privately and you know, claiming and things like that.
Now, you've done very well with claims, especially in recent years. I know there were a couple of races last year where you claimed some horses, took them to stakes level, and won some stakes races with former claimers. That's not easy to do.
No, I mean, there's a bit of luck involved in that, and we certainly were lucky last season. Last year, we claimed a few horses up at Indiana Downs and went on to win a few stakes with them and did quite well, but you know, there's also the horses that don't turn out either. So it's a tough game, but if you do your homework, and I got a good group of guys that I work with, that we have a process that we go through and check off all the boxes. And if horse makes sense, we don't hesitate to, to go after them and put them in our program, and we've had a bit of success here recently.
Is there a specific type of horse that you're looking for, Wayne, that will fit your program when you're looking to claim a horse?
The successful claims we made last year were in some state bed programs. We claimed a horse by the name of Huntstown, and he was lightly raced as a two-year-old, and we picked him up right at the beginning of his three-year-old season. Knew he had several conditions left. Felt like he would end up being a better turf horse than possibly running on the dirt. So we look at all different angles, but we tend to like to have horses in our barn that have some conditions left and have some options as far as different surfaces and different distances. But, like I said before, there's a process that we follow in regards to, rags and sheets and buyer numbers. And then we do as thorough an investigation as we can as far as how they look prior to walking over to the paddock and make sure physically they look the part as well.
Wayne, one horse that you had in your care that competed at a much higher level than the claiming level was in 2010, and it was Proud Heiress, who won your only graded stakes race of your career. It was the Grade 3 Whimsical Stakes at Woodbine. Tell me about Proud Heiress and tell me that story.
Proud Heiress came to me as a three-year-old. She was a very big, stout, probably one of the most gorgeous horses I've ever laid eyes on. Had a lot of energy, just a real high-maintenance type filly. We felt pretty highly of her right from the get-go, and she just really developed into a solid mare. And once we got her in a pretty good rhythm, she won a couple of different stakes at Turfway and was able to ship her up to Woodbine. And matter of fact, she was in foal when we ran her in that Grade 3.
Oh, wow.
And she won while being in foal. So that was a very nice filly that did me well.
Yeah, what do you remember about that day? I mean, that had to be a huge thrill for you picking up that first graded stakes win.
It really was. We had competed in a few other ones and just really didn't have the horsepower to get the job done. But we took her up there feeling like we had a legitimate shot. And she was a sprint closer, and when you're dealing with a sprint closer, it was always one of them things where, you're just getting there at the end, and she was lucky enough to get her nose down first, and it was a thrill. It was a big thrill.
Do you have to train a closer differently than you would train a horse that has early speed and likes to be on the front end?
Not necessarily. I mean, basically, that's just their running style. And it's more to do probably with the way the jockey rides them in the afternoon than actually what I would typically do in the morning with a sprint closer over a horse that might be a more front-running type.
I've had several trainers come on this program, Wayne, and tell me that they'll have jockeys that they feel very comfortable giving a leg up to in a big race. Do you have certain go-to jockeys that you'll like to use when you really need a win?
Well, we develop relationships with these guys at the different circuits, and I'm not a guy that bounces around and uses a lot of different jockeys. We usually settle on a couple of guys depending upon where we're racing. Down here at Tampa, I've had success with Victor LeBron, Pablo Morales won a race for me the other day. We just, we try to keep guys in our camp that are good riders, aggressive riders, and good guys too. So.
Wayne, only a few minutes left. I think we're down to about 3 or 4 minutes left. It's really flown by here on this Trainer Talk show presented by Fasic Tipton. If you're running racing, Wayne, I know you've been involved with the Kentucky HPPA on so many different levels there, but if you're in charge of racing, what are some of the things you want to see accomplished that would help horsemen?
The big push is the medication uniformity. I think that's something that's very important. From one jurisdiction to the next, there's different guidelines and rules. And I think if, you know, they got some sort of uniformity would certainly help the business. In Kentucky, obviously, the hot topic has been casinos, and I support that strictly from the standpoint of Turfway Park being in the backyard of multiple other casino companies right there in the area, and they just had a difficult time competing with the entertainment dollar in that area. So those two things are probably paramount right now in the areas that I conduct my business.
Do you feel like the sport is close to getting those things accomplished?
I don't feel like they're any closer as far as the casinos in Kentucky, but I think the medication uniformity is certainly something that's getting closer.
Yeah, I would agree with you 100%. That's something I've talked about on this program and other programs for a long time, that to me that would be the number one thing on my list if I were going to be, say, commissioner of thoroughbred racing. That would be the first thing I would try to tackle. There's no doubt about that. Wayne, in the final minute and a half or so here, what are some things that people might not know about Wayne Mogie when you're not at the racetrack? What other things do you enjoy doing?
I enjoy sports. Like I said, I enjoy coaching, spending time with my wife and family, and also I enjoy going to the races when I don't have anything else running. I just enjoy the business. I enjoy the pageantry of the horses, and I enjoy watching good horses race.
What's it like when you can go and just be a fan for a day?
Oh, it's cool. I've been to the Breeders' Cup just about every year it's ran, and you know, those kind of days are something guys like me only dream of. Hopefully one day we can get one good enough to compete on a day like that, but seeing all those horses, you know, converge on one track and race over the course of 2 days and being at the top of the game is pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, well said. I hope that someday we're watching Wayne Mogie send one out in one of those Breeders' Cup races, maybe even the Kentucky Derby someday. Wayne, really do appreciate you taking a little time. Like all of our guests, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of one of our sponsors of the program. That's Flair Equine Nasal Strips. I'll get those out to you and want to wish you all the best moving forward, and been such a delight to hear your story here tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, buddy. Wayne Mogie on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Good guy. One of the true good guys in the sport of racing, and somebody who really does encompass what the sport is all about. All right, Ron Fauché coming up, second half of the show. Stay with me. It's Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on HRN.
This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Wonder where you'll find a good broodmare prospect in February? Well, wonder no more. It's the Fasig Tipton February Sale on Sunday, February 8th and Monday, February 9th. At Fasig Tipton February, you'll find an abundance of talented fillies off the track, stakes performers, and graded stakes winners, many by top international stallions. Plus, many attractive stallions with first runners and yearlings in 2015 and a Kentucky Derby winner expecting his first foals. That's typical of the quality of covering sires for in-foal mares at the Fasig Tipton February Sale. So make plans now to attend the Fasig Tipton February Winter Mixed Sale. With something for every buyer, it's the place to be on Sunday, February 8th and Monday, February 9th. Sunday session begins at 3 p.m. with Monday kicking off at 10 a.m. For more information, visit fasigtipton.com.
The New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund means business for New York. Together with all equine pursuits in the Empire State, we pay more than $187 million in taxes and provide 33,000 jobs. We provide scholarships for young people who want to join the New York horse industry, and we encourage everyone to support all thoroughbreds all their lives. Visit nybreds.com to learn more about why the fund means business.
Breathing easy is the key to equine performance and health. That's why horsemen around the world count on Flair nasal strips to protect the lungs of their equine athletes without drugs. Flair Strip's gentle support of the nasal passages reduces the soft tissue collapse that occurs in all horses during intensive exercise. 7 clinical studies prove the benefits of Flair Strips for reducing lung bleeding, reducing fatigue, and shortening recovery time. Reduce bleeding, recover faster, perform better. Prevent, protect, perform with Flair Strips.
Whether you're playing at home or on the go, let Daily Racing Form be your eyes and ears at the track with DRF Live. Every weekend, go to live.drf.com on your desktop or mobile device, and you'll get a direct line to DRF's on-track team all day long. Imagine a live stream of real-time insights straight from the track with information you can only get from being there. DRF's team brings you real-time information you can't get from any PPs. Mike Watchmaker's keys for a pick four at Belmont. Jay Pribman from the paddock at Santa Anita. Mike Welsh trackside at Gulfstream. It's like having the whole DRF team on your own personal live feed, bringing you top plays, paddock observations, and track condition changes. DRF Live is filled with actionable wagering advice, helping you to find value as the odds are shifting. Visit live.drf.com this weekend for DRF Live. That's live.drf.com for DRF Live.
If it happens in horse racing, it happens on HRRN.
But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby! What a memorable Breeders' Cup Classic! It's a race for the ages! Here's the wire, and it's a photo finish that goes to Toneland! Wise Dan gets his head in front! The first $1 million race in Keeneland history!
Racing's biggest events are right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. HRRN's newest show is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Every Tuesday, Mike Penna and Christina McManigal will bring you exclusive interviews with the best jockeys in the business. Tune in on our website for a new episode every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, exclusively on horseracingradio.net.
This is David Cohen.
This is Gary Siaka.
This is David Jacobson.
This is Gary Gallo.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live, presented by Phasic Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on HRRN. Mike Penna in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. Really enjoyable visit with trainer Wayne Mogi in the first half of the program. And I think you're going to thoroughly enjoy our visit with Ron Fauché here in the second half of the show. Don't forget that if you missed any portion, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. Download a podcast of this show and every show that we do right there on our website and by searching HRRN on iTunes. You can have them sent right to your phone and get all of the latest podcasts as soon as they're uploaded by doing that, HRRN on iTunes. Ron Fauché has saddled 244 career winners with more than $5.6 million in purse earnings. The native of New Orleans is with us now here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Where else would he be? He's at the fairgrounds. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And your home track, the fairgrounds. And, hey, let's face it, you've only been out on your own for about 7 years. So 244 winners and $5.6 million, that's not a bad start.
Yes, sir. I mean, it started off well. We went on our own at the end of 2009, and we've consistently increased our numbers. And, basically we're a Louisiana stable, and we're at about 45 head at this point and continue to grow. So we're excited.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story because you didn't necessarily grow up around horses like so many other trainers did that I talked to on this program. Your dad, if I'm not mistaken, was a politician, right?
That's correct. Yeah, my father, he was a politician in Louisiana. He was a state representative. He ran for mayor, actually, the year I was born in New Orleans, finishing second in the runoff. I got into horse racing through my stepfather, Louis Roussel. And, you know, first time I went to the racetrack, I believe I was about 11, 12 years old, and he had a horse running at the fairgrounds. And I really was hooked ever since that, you know. I mean, just the experience, you know, at a young age, you know, the whole thing from the paddock going into the winner's circle, the people involved, it was just, you know, so exciting to me. And I knew kind of at that point I wanted to do something in racing, you know.
So many people will remember that name, Louis Roussel, as the owner and trainer of 1988 Preakness and Belmont winner Risen Star. Have you ever sat down and asked him to tell you the story of Risen Star?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's gone through many stories about him. You know, he Louis, if you know him, he's a great storyteller. So, you know, I've heard, you know, stories from when he won the Louisiana Derby to running third in the Kentucky Derby to winning the Belmont. I mean, he, you know, he's got, you know, hundreds of stories about Risen Star.
What's the story? I'll put you on the spot a little bit, Ron. What's the story that stands out to you the most? One of the stories that he's told you that you can tell on the radio.
Right. Well, you know, he, I think just, you know, winning the Belmont, second fastest time to Secretariat, you know, he gets so emotional when he tells that story, you know, and I think that race kind of was, you know, I don't think, you know, any race meant as much as that race to him, you know. You know, just to win a race like that, as easy as he did it, and, you know, he truly loves that story, and I don't think he would rather win any race in the world, you know, over that. So
I read somewhere, Ron, that your mom, Sally, remembered you as a 10-year-old boy shouting into a megaphone at home and announcing made-up races. Is that true?
Yeah, it was a little bit, you know, about probably 12, I would say. But, yeah, I would, you know, just try to mimic the announcer. And, you know, it was just, you know, it was something funny. Everybody would love me to do it. And I would, you know, I'd get a kick out of everybody involved with it. So it's a true story, yes.
I would do the same thing. So believe me, I'm never going to make fun of you for that. I wanted to be a track announcer so bad growing up. And I was in Massachusetts, and I grew up watching Tom Durkin, and much of his career was what I grew up with. And I would do the very same thing. I would actually jog to Tom Durkin race calls in my Walkman. Here you go, taking you back a few years. And I would jog to a cassette tape of Tom Durkin race calls that I made.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm sick. Yep. Now, you spent a little time around Neil Pessin, too, didn't you, fellow trainer?
Yeah, well, Neil's a good friend of mine. You know, the first trainer I ever worked for was Billy Badgett, actually. I guess I was about 16 years old, and we would he was at the fairgrounds at the time, and, you know, I went out there, started walking hots for him, and really got into it that way. And, you know, over the summers, through my high school years, I would go spend a lot of the summer up in New York with him. You know, that's kind of how I got my foot in the door on the backside. So, you know, and obviously Neil as well. I mean, I would go to his barn all the time too, you know, being right next to Louis's barn and, you know, help him out with various things at an early age.
What's the biggest lesson that you learned from being around Billy Badgett?
Well, you know, Billy, I mean, he's a great horseman, you know. He taught me, you know, work ethic more than anything, you know. He was, you know, nobody worked harder than him in the business. And, you know, at an early age, that was really good for me to get a grasp of through him. And, you know, I remember getting to the barn late one morning and about an hour late, and, you know, I had Louie in the barn, I had Billy in the barn, my mom's calling my phone, and, you know, where am I? And I walked in the barn, Billy sent me home, and, you know, but it taught me a good lesson, you know. I mean, here he is going out his way to help me, and, you know, I'm showing up late, you know, and it really kind of hit home. And, you know, Billy was a guy, I mean, to me, you know, almost like a, you know, another father figure, you know, where he, you know, he would give me that tough love when need be, you know, and I think that really helped me out a lot later on in life.
Well, if you didn't learn discipline from being around Billy Badgett, I know that you had to learn discipline from being around Todd Pletcher after that, because you spent some time working with Todd.
Correct. Yep. Billy actually had a lot to do with that connection, getting me the job. And, you know, I worked with Todd for a little bit over 2 years, about 2.5 years. And, you know, obviously, you know, that tight operation, you know, you learn organization, you learn, obviously, discipline, like we had said, and you know, responsibility that lies on you. You know, that helps, you know, today with my daily operations. So,
yeah, I think I read an article that mentioned that one summer you were working for Todd at Saratoga, and that every foreman quit except you. So that shows you how difficult it had to be.
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of one of those things, but it was, you know, the numbers were up that year, and it was just kind of one of those kind of hectic couple of months where, you know, you had to really just buckle down. You know, if you had to get in the stalls, you had to get in the stalls. If you had to, you know, you do whatever's asked of you, really, you know.
What did people think of Ron Fauché, this kid from New Orleans, who all of a sudden is working with operations like Billy Badgett and Todd Pletcher? What was that like for you?
I mean, it was incredible. I mean, I asked Todd, he was sending circular key and master command to the fairgrounds for the Louisiana Derby and New Orleans Handicap. And, several other horses, I believe 6 in total. And I asked, you know, if he'd mind if I go down there to help out with everything. And he sent me, you know, knowing that it would mean a lot to me. And that was special, you know, coming back to New Orleans, you know, being a part of an operation like that. And, you know, it was a big deal at the time for me. So, yeah, it was very special working in a big operation like that, you know, working for the best. You know, he is the best. So.
Well, that was the year that Circular Key won the Louisiana Derby and Master Command took the New Orleans Handicap on that same card. We were there. It was our first broadcast on the network ever from Fairgrounds. And it's a very special day for me because of that. But heck, Todd should have sent you everywhere after that if you're going to have that kind of success.
Yeah, well, he started sending me quite a you know, quite a bit of places after that, you know. So,
talking with Ron Fauché here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. All right, Ron, I'm going to ask you, when you look at your name, it has to be pronounced about 100 different ways, and I have heard it myself about 10 different ways, I think, and I'm going with Fauché. First of all, I think I'm getting it right. Am I getting it right? And then how many times have you heard it pronounced differently?
That's the correct pronunciation, Fauché. I've heard it every which way you could imagine. You know, when I first started training on my own, you know, not I couldn't tell enough people that that's how you pronounce it, so I just kind of stopped trying. Everybody would say for show, you know, Ron for show is going to win the race, you know. it was, you know, but no, that's the proper pronunciation, Fauché.
All right, so you go from working with Todd Pletcher, you go down to the fairgrounds in 07 to be close to home. You have all that success, and you're continuing on with Todd. What eventually led to the decision to have you go out on your own and do this and give it a shot on your own with Ron Fauché?
Well, we went out on our own in 2009. I had a little stint at the fairgrounds meet with Steve Placeres, and kind of, you know, was kind of gathering myself and trying to figure out how to do it on my own. And I was fortunate enough to have Frank Calabrese send me a couple of horses to the fairgrounds. And, you know, the one thing, you know, I must say, you know, Louie said, Ron, I don't care what you do, lose the horses or what, just make sure you win with them, you know. So we were able to win three races with the two horses and gain a little confidence with Frank. And he sent $50,000. He said, okay, you can claim whatever you want, you know, claim some for Arlington. So we claimed three horses with that $50,000, with the help of Steve Leving, who was the racing manager at the time. And we went to Arlington. We won with all three of those, and it was on from there. You know, he just kind of gave me free rein to do what I wanted.
Yeah, I read that if you hadn't won with those two horses, you said you might be doing something else right now.
It's true. You know, I mean, you got to take advantage of the opportunity that's granted. And we were able to do that. So
did he
kind of,
I mean,
at that point,
I know you mentioned the racing manager, but did he give you carte blanche when he gave you that money to say, hey, Ron, you determine which horses we want to claim?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it was up to me. However, you know, working with the racing manager, Steve Levin, at the time, you know, he's a man I learned a lot from, as far as the rag sheet goes and so forth. I mean, he was really sharp at claiming horses. So, I mean, obviously I took a lot into consideration what he recommended. But it was up to me ultimately to make those decisions, you know.
What's the key to claiming a good horse?
You know, I mean, it's a question that's asked to me all the time, and there's really not a right answer, you know. You can't be scared. You know, you have to take chances sometimes, you know. You know, I prefer to claim horses on the raise personally because it's kind of a, you know, sometimes it's a tell that the horse is sound. You know, whether we're so confident in our operations, if we get a sound horse, we feel we can get the best out of that horse. So, you know, we're looking at it like this horse, you know, maybe this horse was, you know, talented at one point, or, you know, he's digressing in form. But if the horse is sound and we feel we can get a sound horse off of a claim, we can get him back to that previous form. So you look at it from that aspect. And like I said, you know, on a raise where a horse could be, you know, possibly starting to get better, you know, maybe in our program we can excel that horse even further. So,
you know, maybe
that's kind of how we do it.
The best horse that you've had, I would say, and I hope I'm not overstepping my bounds in saying that, but your only greatest stakes winner, and that's Gantry, who won the Smile Sprint Handicap in 2012 at Calder. Again, another race. We were there. I remember that performance. It was sensational. He absolutely blistered the track that day. And I'm just curious about training a horse like that, like Gantry, and then training claiming horses. Do you have to adjust your philosophy at all?
No, not really. I mean, you know, we treat all our horses the same way, and we try to get the best out of all of them. You know, we try to get to gear up for a campaign of races. The better horses sometimes, but you know, you're still trying to bring out the best in every horse. And you know, there's not really one thing you do different with a for me. You know, with a claimer or a graded stake horse. You know, you train them the way that they need to be trained, and you try to bring out the best in their ability.
Take me back to that day at Calder in 2012 and look back on that performance by Gantry and share your thoughts as to what was going through your mind when you win your first graded stakes. Had to be pretty cool.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I had my girlfriend there, who's now my wife, Amanda, and, you know, it was the first win for Miss Evelyn, a graded stake win for her, and myself, obviously. It was just, you know, with the horse that, you know, I picked out as a private purchase. I mean, it just, it was special, you know, it was very special for us. You know, that accomplishment at the time, you know, it was just a, it was just a huge deal for us and in our operation and everyone involved, you know.
In some ways, Ron, did that take your career to a new level when you burst into national prominence with a horse like Gantry?
You know, I think so. I mean, I think without Gantry, I think there might not have been a Sunbeam to follow or a Class Included, you know, those other type of stake horses that we had. I think it showed you that we're more than just a claim and outfit, but we can develop, you know, good horses into greater horses. And you know, I owe, you know, Gantry a lot for our success. So, yeah, I do think that he had a lot to do with that. Correct.
Will trainers actually sit down and set goals for themselves as to things that they want to accomplish in this sport, Ron?
You know, speaking for myself, I mean, not really, you know, I mean, I set certain goals, you know, to myself. I don't really tell anyone about, you know, whether it's, you know, where you want to be, you know, in a meet, you know, where would you like to be in the standings or, you know, obviously individually what you want each horse to do, as far as their career goes. But, you know, I think you just kind of have to take it a whole, you know, every horse is different. And like I said earlier, you know, try to get the best out of each horse and that, you know, that should, you know, fulfill the goals that you set, you know, when you do that. So,
yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the standings because that's one thing that we'll often read in the news that, hey, this trainer was leading trainer at this meet, or he's second in the standings behind so-and-so. How close will trainers keep an eye on those standings during the meet?
They keep an eye on it. I don't care what somebody says. I think they keep, you know, most trainers, if not all, keep an eye on it, you know. I think, you know, but you can't get carried away with it at the same aspect. You know, win percentage, you know, standings, you can't get carried away with it. You just have to keep doing right by each horse individually and let that put you where it does. So,
you mentioned your wife, Amanda, Ron, and you weren't married at the time you won the Smile Sprint. You're married now. Was she involved in racing when you met her?
Her mother actually introduced us. Her mother works at the HBPA, does the Horseman's Insurance in Louisiana. But she's been around it, you know, most of her life. So she has a good grasp of what we have to do daily. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, it certainly helps to have somebody like that involved when you're training horses. I'm sure you're away from home quite often, shipping horses around the country. And now that you continue to grow your operation and get bigger, that's probably going to become more frequent, isn't it?
Yeah, we think so. You know, like I said earlier, we're primarily in Louisiana. We have a string set at all four racetracks in the state, with the majority of the horses being at the fairgrounds over the winter and a small string at Delta. And over the summer, we're stable at the Evangeline Training Center and a small string at Louisiana Downs. However, you know, we think as we continue to grow that we probably will step outside the state eventually. We're not sure when, but when we do it, we want to make a splash. You know, we want to have a reason to do it. So, you know, we do ship horses to run in, you know, we've won races in Kentucky and New York. However, you know, in order to send a decent-sized string, you know, we would want to be properly prepared to do so. But at this point, you know, I'm 32 years old, and We have a lot of young people that work for us, and we're extremely happy and committed to Louisiana racing. And, you know, 32 years old is pretty young in the eyes of the horse world. So I'm sure eventually we will, but we're just not sure when.
I want to come back to that quote that I mentioned earlier, Ron, where you said that if you didn't win with those two Calabrese runners that he sent you early on when you were just getting started, you might be doing something else. What else would you be doing if you weren't training racehorses?
That's a good question. I think I'd be training racehorses, but I don't know if I'd be doing it for myself. yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, that's really what got us going. And I went to Chicago and then Florida after for Frank, and we decided to kind of part ways during the Gulfstream meet, and I wanted to get back to the fairgrounds. And but he was kind enough to send a couple horses to the fairgrounds with me, four horses. So I kind of had to rebuild from there. But it was a little bit easier the second time. You know, I was bringing 40 win percentage to the fairgrounds, and people kind of heard of me through that and you know, through the success I had at Arlington and in Florida. You know, I definitely give Frank Calabrese a lot of credit for picking out, you know, trainers, and always have had, you know, always have, you know, the success that he's had. You know, but that's kind of how we got rolling, you know.
When you first started running horses on your own at fairgrounds, you were in a barn that was about the furthest from the racetrack you could get. And it's a lot of people joke around and call it the dungeon because it is so far away. Are you still in that same barn? And if so, did you request to stay in that barn?
No, we've been moved around a little bit. We're extremely happy where we're located now. We're in barn 33, which is right there off the horse path, pretty close to the track. That barn back there, I mean, we had a great time. You know, we were winning races and, you know, a lot of good characters were stable back there with us. But as our stable grew, you know, they found a better location for us.
Ron, only about 2 minutes left. It's really flown by. Really enjoyed our visit. What's left? Well, I'm sure there's plenty of things left, but what's on the Ron Fauché bucket list that you want to accomplish in the sport of racing?
You know, like I said earlier, I don't really have long-term goals set. You know, we have Sunbeam entered today for Delta at Delta Downs for premier night in the 200,000 mile and 16th race over there. You know, he just turned 5 years old, and he's a millionaire already, a Louisiana bred. And you know, my owner Evelyn Benoit, who's been fabulous, you know, to work for. She had a champion herself in Star Guitar. And, you know, we'd like to eclipse his earnings, you know, eventually. He earned over 1.7 million. And, you know, that's a, you know, goal that we're going to go for. We're going to try to eclipse his earnings, I think, with a horse that she bred. So we'll go for that. But, you know, overall, we're just, you know, happy where we're at, and we'll continue to grow and you know, see where it takes us.
Well, Ron, it certainly sounds like you're all about the horses and making sure that you're doing right by the horses, which I think is the absolute 110% right approach. So want to wish you all the best moving forward. Always like to end these trainer talk shows by asking trainers what they like to do when they're not around the racetrack. What other interests do you have?
Big football fan, big sports fan in general, and just hanging out with the family, you know.
New Orleans Saints? Is it the New Orleans Saints for you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Big Saints fan. Huge Saints fan. I was at the Super Bowl when they won it. I wouldn't trade that moment for any.
You and Dallas Stewart. You can go together.
Absolutely. Yep.
Ron Fauché here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Ron, we could have spent another half hour easy. Really appreciate you taking the time. Like all of our guests, you're going to receive a gift from Flair Equine Nasal Strips. We'll get that in the mail, and appreciate it, my friend. All the best moving forward.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, Ron Fauché here on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic. Tipton, Wayne Mogie in the first half of the program. If you did miss any portion, go to our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes and get that podcast of this show and all of our shows. Don't forget tomorrow night, the Brisnet.com call-in show, 6 to 7 Eastern. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton.